Hello, this is Dee reading the Vermilion County News for November 2nd. We'll begin our reading with the front page article entitled, Restaurants and Bars Face Indoor Dining Bans. Restaurants Push Back by Jerry Nowicki, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Illinois is down to one region that is not facing increased COVID-19 mitigations after East Central Illinois' Region 6, which includes Vermilion and surrounding counties, reached an 8% positivity rate for the third straight day, according to Friday's data. With community transmission rates on the rise all around our state, it's more important than ever to take caution, mask up, avoid gatherings, and ensure your family gets through this as safe as can be, Governor J.B. Pritzker said in a news release. Let's remember that the quickest way we get kids back into schools and businesses open and workers employed is to bring down infections, positivity rates, and hospitalizations in our communities. And that means mask up, wash up, back up, and sleeve up to get your flu shot. The final unmitigated region, Region 2, which includes Peoria and several surrounding counties, shot up to an 8.5% positivity rate from 7.9% the day before, meaning two more days at the same pace of virus spread will trigger the mitigations there as well. While the mitigations include capacity limits of the lesser of 25 people or 25% capacity at gatherings, both indoor and outdoor, the main mitigation measure is the closure of bars and restaurants to indoor service. For Region 6, the mitigations will take effect Monday, November 2nd. The Illinois Restaurant Association announced in a news conference Friday morning that it would file a court brief supporting a Kane County business challenging the governor's authority to shut down indoor dining. The IRA has repeatedly called upon Governor Pritzker to take a more reasonable and pragmatic approach to mitigation and to collaborate on a plan that is less detrimental to the state's largest private sector employer. Association President and CEO Sam Tola said at the news conference, "We just heard from previous speakers who were restaurant owners how devastating and unjustified these restrictions are to the industry and our economy. And it is important that our legal efforts align with the interests of the businesses and passionate individuals who make up our restaurant community." The announcement came as the state reported another 6,943 new confirmed cases, a one-day record, among 95,111 test results reported, which was also a one-day record. That made for a single-day positivity rate of 7.3%, driving the rolling 7-day average positivity rate to 7.3% as well, the highest 7-day average since May 29th. The Illinois Department of Public Health also reported another 36 COVID-19-related deaths, bringing the death toll to 9,711. Since the usage for COVID-19 each pushed second wave highs for the fifth straight day Friday. Intensive care bed usage set its second wave high for the seventh straight day. As of Thursday night, 3,092 people in Illinois were reported hospitalized with COVID-19, including 673 in the ICU and since the pandemic began. The state also surpassed 400,000 confirmed cases among more than 7.6 million test results reported as the total case count grew to 402,401. Hospitalizations and ventilator, 288 people are on ventilators. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service covering state government and distributed to more than 400 newspapers statewide. It is funded primarily by the Illinois Press Foundation and the Robert R. McCormick Foundation. Our next front page article is entitled Turnout, Danville County See Record-Setting Voting by Jennifer Bailey. Earlier this week, the Danville Election Commission and Vermilion County Clerk's Office saw another presidential election year of record-setting numbers for early voting. 4 years ago, in the last presidential election, there were about 2,200 early Danville voters, not including newly registered voters. So far, for the November 3rd election, the Danville Election Commission has seen more than 2,875 early in-person voters and had processed 1,660 vote-by-mail ballots. There are about 17,000 registered voters in Danville, which means a voter turnout so far of about 27%. In Vermilion County, voter turnout already is about 20%. The Vermilion County Clerk's Office has seen more than 3,160 in-person voters. Officials mailed 3,400 ballots and have gotten about 2,500 back. Of the 29,787 active registered voters, the county has received 5,789 ballots back so far. "We broke our record Tuesday afternoon," said Lindsay Light, Chief Deputy County Clerk Supervisor of Elections. Voter turnout for the 2012 and 2016 elections were about 60% in Danville and about 70% in Vermilion County. The 2016 election saw about 2,900 early county voter ballots, plus 984 vote-by-mail ballots. 2012 saw about 1,500 early county ballots, with 463 ballots mailed in. Light said she wants to remind voters that if they have a vote-by-mail ballot and want to instead vote in person, to bring the vote-by-mail ballot with them polling place to surrender it. Those in the county who voted by mail can see on the website vercounty.org if their ballot was received. Light said they're updating the list every few days. Also, she said they've had questions about the tax question on the ballot. It is the constitutional amendment, the first question on the ballot. Danville Election Commission Executive Director Sandra Delhay said they are seeing 200 to 225 early voters a day. "We are swamped most of the time," Delhay said. "This is record turnout. We surpassed both numbers of vote-by-mail and early voting." She said the office receives phone calls from people asking if they'll have to wait an hour or more to vote, such as the long lines seen on television in big cities. Delhay tells them if there is a wait, it's not that long. The most she's counted in line is 9 people to vote at the Election Commission office in the lower level of the Vermilion County Administration Building at 201 North Vermilion Street. Early voting for Vermilion County voters is on the first floor of the Administration Building. While election officials have seen regular long-time voters, they've also seen first-time voters. Delhay said they can clap for the first-time voters and congratulate them. "We're seeing an influx of young people," Delhay said, adding that she also knows at least a handful of first-time voters. "It's just wonderful." She said the first-time voters are excited and nervous. Also, for the first time, the Danville Election Commission office will be open on Election Day, same as the polling places, from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. for people to vote. At the Election Commission office, people can vote from any precinct. "We're geared up for that. We don't know what to expect," Delhay said about Election Day voting numbers. "It's hard to tell." Delhay and Light said some diehard voters want to vote at their polling place on Election Day. A Danville resident who needs to register to vote can do so at a polling place and vote at the same time. Light said voters outside of Danville in Vermilion County can still register at the county clerk's office. "We've registered quite a few new voters," she said, adding too that they've had some people who have never voted and wanted to vote in this election. She said they've also seen families vote together, and some couples have made early voting a date night to vote and get dinner. Early voting continues 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 9 a.m. to noon at the Danville Election Commission, and also at both offices from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday. Light said there are some additional COVID-19 protections with this election compared to the spring. There will be plexiglass between the judges and voters. They also will wipe down ballot tables, pens, booths, the walls, and sanitize everything. There also will be an overabundance of hand sanitizer, but Light said they do not require voters wear masks because of constitutional rights. Voters won't be turned away for no masks, she said, but added they will have masks available for those who want one. We're taking every possible precaution we can, Light said, adding they want everyone to feel comfortable and as close to normal when voting. Delhaye, too, said that they have additional cleaning processes in place, as with the spring election, due to COVID-19. They will be wiping tables and pens and providing gloves, masks, and face shields, sanitary wipes, and hand sanitizer pumps. We're very diligent, she said. Light and Delhaye said they've had some older election judges take a doctor's advice or decide to sit this election out due to COVID-19. Election night results will begin to be posted as election judges bring in the results to download. Results will be on the Danville Election Commission website, danvillevotes.com, and also the county clerk's website at vercounty.org. Regular updates are expected, with Light saying the end of the night will see the bigger jump in election result numbers when the early voting and vote-by-mail ballots are added in. Light said if there are more volumes of voters on election day, it could take election judges a little longer to check everything that night. We try to stay on top of things, Light added, about any election day issues. She said it also takes some election judges, such as in Hoopston and Rankin, a little longer to get results to the office. I think we are prepared, Delhaye said, adding that they hope for no major bumps in the road with the election. I feel good. Nationally, eyes will be on the presidential election next week, but there are also a number of local races on the November 3rd ballot that impact residents locally. Races include U.S. Congress, 15th Congressional District, Erica Weaver and Mary Miller. State Senator, 52nd District, Scott Bennett and Alexander Ruggeri. State Representative, 104th District, Cynthia Cunningham and Mike Marin. Vermilion County Circuit Clerk, Gwendolyn Meeks and Melissa Quick. Vermilion County State's Attorney, Sandra Loyless and Jacqueline Lacey. County Board District 4, with two seats open, Carl Lee Johnson, Jermaine Light, Robert Mitch Weaver, and Marla Makowitz. County Board District 7, one open seat, Greg Thatcher and Jeremy Hawker. Also, Georgetown voters have a referendum question. Shall the city of Georgetown become a whole rural unit of local government? Another front page article is entitled Council to Act on Sewer Fee Next Week by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. The Danville City Council next week still will consider a $29.75 a month residential sewer fee, increased from an average $16 a month fee starting next year. But there have been some other changes to future fee increases and fee increases for businesses and buildings with multi-units. Through this process, we have considered input from numerous parties, including large businesses, residents, rental property owners, commercial businesses, commercial property owners, and council members, according to City Engineer Sam Cole. We believe that these changes will lessen the impact to small business and large customers alike, while distributing the costs fairly and providing the needed revenue to address ongoing storm sewer and sanitary sewer problems throughout our community. It's not perfect, as nothing is, but this is well on its way. Summary of storm sanitary sewer fee proposed changes. City officials have changed the language from 5,000 gallons per single-family residence to 5,236 gallons, 7 CCF, 1 CCF equals 100 cubic feet. This is to assist in easily converting data from the water utility to the city's billing process. The effect of item 1 is that the surcharge rate, which is the cost per 1,000 gallons, went down from $5.95 to $5.68. This means that for every 1,000 gallons of use above that included in the base charge, a customer would pay an extra $5.68 rather than $5.95. This will be a 4.5% decrease in the rate paid by a large customer from that initially proposed. Revised commercial, institutional, governmental, and industrial minimal charges to $42.50 rather than $59.50. This was a result of changing usage allowance in the base charge from 10,000 gallons to 7,480 gallons, 10 CCF. The city also provides an opportunity for non-residential users to get a rate reduction to the residential rate if they meet certain typical single-family residential characteristics as provided in the ordinance. The multi-unit rate is reduced to $17 from $17.85 per unit by including 4 CCF, that's 2,992 gallons, in the base charge and prorating it to the 7 CCF, which is 5,236 gallons, included in a single-family home. The city has provided an exemption from charges on water used for certain watering and irrigation provided that the usage is separately metered by the water utility. Change the annual increase from 5% to $1 per month each year for single-family residential. All increases for other users will be prorated respectively as laid out in the ordinance. All user charges shall be subject to automatic annual increases for a 4-year period. The single-family residential minimum monthly base user charge shall be subject to an automatic $1 per month annual increase beginning on April 1, 2022. The council will meet at 6 p.m. Tuesday via teleconference with the link on the city's website at cityofdanville.org. And now we'll turn to obituaries. The first is Stanley Peter Wuss, 87 of Westville, passed away at 8:28 a.m. Wednesday, October 28th at his home. A private family service will be held. His family was assisted by Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center. He will be laid to rest in Saints Peter and Paul Cemetery, Westville. Memorial donations may be given in his name to Saints Peter and Paul Cemetery and St. Mary's Church, Altar and Rosary Society. Irene Minnie Jameson Eichen, 94, of Brandontown, Florida, formerly of Davenport, Iowa, and East Peoria, Illinois, passed away on Sunday, October 25th, 2020. A celebration of life service will be held at 2 p.m. on November 2nd, 2020, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Pastor Ed Stone will be officiating. Entombment will be in Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Carla Lynn Westfall, 54, of Paxton, formerly of Urbana and Cisna Park, passed away at 9:35 a.m. Tuesday, October 27th, at Accolade Healthcare in Paxton. Cremation rites will be accorded, and graveside services and burial will take place at a later date. Memorials in Carla's name can be made to the Accolade Healthcare on Pell's Activity Department, 1001 East Pell's Street, Paxton, Illinois, 60957. Dwayne Allen Fiddler, age 75, of Chrisman, Illinois, passed into heaven on October 14, 2020, at Carl Foundation Hospital. A graveside funeral was held on Monday, October 19th, at 12:30 p.m. at Holt Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the American Legion, Post 477, or Chrisman Firemen's Association. Sally Sue Grubb, 80, of Georgetown, passed away at 6:46 a.m. Wednesday, October 28th. As per her wishes, Sally will be accorded cremation rites. There are no services at this time. And now we'll return to reading articles. The next one is entitled Hoopston Seeks Entries in Logo Contest by Carol Hicks. Hoopston. The Hoopston Preservation Commission is seeking current and former residents of Hoopston to create a logo to commemorate the 150th year of Hoopston's founding. The winning logo will receive $100, compliments of Just the Facts. I'm pleased to partner with the commission on this effort, said Just the Facts publisher Lourdine Florick. As the commission has worked on the sesquicentennial, it has used examples from the 1971 centennial as a backdrop. I'm sure those who will put together the bicentennial in 2071 will look at what was done in 2021. It will be an important part of Hoopston history. The sesquicentennial year celebration is tentatively scheduled for Sunday, June 27th to July 3rd, 2021, ending with the fireworks celebrating the 4th of July. There's no specific theme or slogan for the sesquicentennial. Therefore, artists are free to let their imaginations roam. All mediums of creations can be used: paint, photography, digital, or mixed media. Designs can be submitted digitally in either PDF or JPEG to Florek at publish@justthefacts.net or by hard copy taken or sent to the Hoopston City Hall, 301 West Main Street, Hoopston, Illinois, 60942. So again, designs can be submitted to @publish@justthefacts.net or by hard copy. Florek said designs should be no larger than 5 megabytes and may be in black and white or color. Artists should check their designs before submission to assure the design is visually appealing in black and white. Florek will check if each design fits the guidelines before the commission receives the submissions. Deadline for both is December 1, 2020. The commission will review submissions and announce its choice at the Community Awards Ceremony in January 2021. Florek said volunteers are still needed to help with the event, and donations are being accepted to help cover expenses for the week-long event. Without enough donations and volunteers, said Mayor Bill Crusenberry, the anniversary may have to be cut back to a one-day event. For more information or to volunteer to help with the sesquicentennial events, contact any commission member: Marta Pierce, Brad Hardcastle, Jeanette Andre, Christy Kellenhofer, Valerie Hinkle, Debbie Benjamin, and Ellen Sharlock, or call Hoopston City Hall, 217-283-5833. And now we have a staff report entitled Homer Resident Earns Lakeview Scholarship. Danville. Lakeview College of Nursing, LCN, awarded a transfer merit scholarship with a value of $20,000 to Lindsay Cox of Homer. She was chosen among the many qualified applicants based upon her outstanding academic record, according to Amy McFadden, LCN Scholarship Committee Chair. Cox, who is the daughter of Joel and Sonia Stevens of Griffin, Georgia, is a 2020 graduate of Griffin High School, Griffin, Georgia. She is married to Brandon Cox of Homer, Illinois. She is currently attending Parkland College, where she's been taking the necessary preliminary coursework in order to transfer in the spring semester of 2021 to pursue a Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree from LCN. Cox was grateful to receive the scholarship award. She said, "This scholarship means everything to me. I always strive to better myself, so I am thankful to have the financial stability to aid me in furthering my education." The desire to become a nurse grew out of her dad's influence, Cox said. Growing up, my dad always instilled in me the desire to help others in their time of need, explained Cox. It wasn't until I was put in difficult situations, during the tough and sometimes tragic times in their lives, that I realized my strengths in encouraging and uplifting others. In the medical field, there is an abundance of people that need that kind of care. I feel like I can really make a difference, no matter how small, stated Cox. McFadden said the scholarship came from the desire of the college's scholarship committee to reward and encourage high-achieving transfer students, as well as the commitment of the college's board of directors to provide financial assistance to its students. The funding for this scholarship, as well as the funding for our transfer financial need-based scholarship, was made available through a very wise long-term investment strategy spearheaded by former CEO Dick Shockey and current college president Sheila Mingy, added McFadden. The scholarship award will assist Cox with the cost of tuition, books, and necessary supplies for Lakeview's Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree program. More information about scholarship opportunities at Lakeview can be found at https://lakeviewcol.edu/scholarships. Lakeview College of Nursing offers a Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree. It is a single-purpose, private institution that has specialized in nursing education in the Danville area since 1894. Lakeview began offering the program in Charleston, Illinois, in the fall of 2001. And now some community briefs. COVID-19 mobile testing available. The Vermilion County Health Department reports that the state's mobile COVID testing team will be in the front parking lot of Danville Area Community College for 7 days, from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., beginning Monday, November 2nd through Sunday, November 8th. There will be two more adult flu vaccination clinics, Friday, November 6th from 1 to 4 p.m., and Saturday, November 7th from 9 a.m. until noon. Most insurance cards are accepted. And DAC offers phlebotomy techniques class. Danville Area Community College's Corporate Education Department is offering a class on phlebotomy techniques. The phlebotomy techniques class for spring 2021 starts on January 19th and ends April 15th, 2021. The hybrid class meets on Tuesday and Thursday afternoons in room 136 of the Bremer Conference Center. The actual class meeting schedule will be provided by the instructor. The cost is $450. Registration begins November 9th online. Payment is available for this course at https://danvillecorporatetraining.coursestorm.com. To pay with cash or check, call 217-443-8777. To learn how to pay on campus via the cashier's office and register via the Corporate and Community Education Office, which is located in the Bremer Conference Center. Danville Area Community College's Corporate Education Department is also offering a class on pharmacy technicians. The class for spring 2021 starts on January 21st and ends April 22nd, 2021. The hybrid class meets on Thursday evenings in room 136 Bremer Conference Center. Local pharmacists will instruct the course. The cost for the class is $375 and registration begins November 9th, 2020. This has been Dee reading the Vermilion County News for November 2nd. I hope you have a great day, and I look forward to reading with you again soon.